Thanks, Steve Bertrand. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, out on the sick, filling in my friend Harry Tynowitz. Hello, Harry.
Hey, Bill. It's just so good to be here with
you. Nice to see you. Now, a quick question before anything important is said.
Yes.
You're clad in a Miami Dolphins jersey. Is it because, A, you know that I am a fan of the Miami Dolphins, B, because they are going to be on Monday Night Football tonight, or C, because you know you look incredibly sexy in it?
Can we go with D, all of the above?
Is it all of them? Yeah.
It is all of the above.
Well, good.
Yes.
You look good in it.
Well, thank you. And to those of you wondering, no, it's not a Jay Cutler Dolphins jersey.
No one was wondering
no.
that. No one was
Nobody
wondering
was thinking that.
That. Nobody. I don't think anybody was. Thank you for filling in today. If you're a usual listener to the show, you know that Wendy is out because she had her knee replaced. She's doing fine, and at some point this week, we will check in with her. Probably tomorrow, we will check in with her and see how things are going. No reason to worry. Everything went well. There was a surgery a few days ago. The knee is out, the new knee is in, and that's all we know at this time, but she'll check in probably tomorrow.
Well, I certainly hope Wendy's okay, and I'm very glad that she got this done. Two quick questions about Wendy's knee.
Yes.
Is it bionic?
Yes.
That's great.
She's a bionic knee.
She can be the field goal kicker for the Bears next season.
And Dr. Rudy Goldman said that everything went well.
Oh, that's great. Rudy Goldman. And did she get the knee new, or is it Ditka's old knee?
I know she was shopping. You know, TJ Maxx has a medical section now.
They do.
Of slightly unusual body parts. And I know she was shopping there, and she saw something she thought she liked. I don't know if she picked it out or not, but it might be new. It might be refurbished. Either way.
Well, that's,
it all depends on your HMO. You know that.
Sure.
If you can get a new one or a refurbished.
Absolutely. Well, I'll have to spend more time at TJ Maxx.
Please do. Also, while we're talking about all things medical.
Yeah, you had a little.
I had a procedure done on Friday that I was so nervous about. It was my first colonoscopy. That's also the name of my new ABC After School special.
Uh-huh. Were you performing it, or was
no,
it?
No. I was having it done to me by professionals. And Harry,
you know.
I was
as opposed to the other ones.
Yeah, you can get them done now by amateurs, people who just want to do it as a hobby. But I opted to go with the professional, Steve.
It's like when you have a barber college, Steve, and like the guy.
Right, yeah. You can save a little cash.
You can. There is that option. Yes. So you're supposed to have this done when you're 50, and I was 50 a couple of years back.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday!
But thank you, Harry. But I was very nervous about it. For several reasons. Number one, I have a horrible fear of needles, and I know that they have to give you an IV during the procedure. And also, the rest that goes along with a colonoscopy, right. I'm also afraid of that.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
And there's that, like, you have to drink the stuff the night before.
For people who have not had this done, there's a fluid that you have to drink a lot of, 4 liters of, 3 to 4 liters of, that's like a syrupy water. It's not pleasant.
It's red.
Mine was clear.
Oh, that would have made a big difference.
You're going to have to go back.
Harry, they told me to not eat or drink anything red.
Mine couldn't have been more red. Mine was like Santa's jacket.
Really?
Yes, mine was red.
They are so adamant on every page. I got a 4-page list of instructions on how to prepare for this. And on every page at the top, it says to be certain that nothing red is ingested for at least 24 to 48 hours before the procedure.
That's
because they don't want anything that resembles in any way any sort of like bloody residue.
Oh, well, see.
Sorry for speaking British.
That's all right. See, mine, I think that's a new John Lithgow series coming up. mine was nothing about like being red. All the literature that they gave me just said no milk duds.
No milk duds.
No snow caps.
Yeah, they're very serious about that too.
But you drink it, and then they tell you, did they warn you to stay close to a
It doesn't say it in the instructions, but everybody from the doctor who kept suggesting that I have this procedure done to the people at the pharmacy, like everybody I've come in contact with say, you're going to spend a lot of time in or near a bathroom, so just be ready for that. You have to drink 8 or 10 ounces of this every 15 minutes, which is a nonstop. I mean, it's nonstop drinking, and it is not a pleasant drink.
Well, it's like Trump with Diet Coke.
Yes.
So I had no idea that it was about to happen. Like, you know, moments beforehand, I'm still like, hey, this isn't even working.
Right.
You know, this is like a wasted night for me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like.
The floodgates open literally and figuratively. Yes, they do.
Good choice of words.
Yes, they do. So I have to say to people, because I'm when it comes to anything medical, any procedures of any kind of medical, I am a baby. I'm a little baby. This couldn't have been easier. Everybody kept telling me, you'll remember nothing about it. They go, all you remember is you're in the hospital and they say it's going to happen. And then somebody wakes you up and they tell you that it's happened. Right. That's exactly what happens. I was sure that people were being nice. They weren't being nice. That's exactly it. You remember little to none of it.
But you didn't wake up in a hospital, though. You woke up in a Chick-fil-A.
Right. That's the weird thing. I can't. I don't know how that happened.
I don't know why that would happen. So is everything good?
Everything couldn't be better. Yeah.
And did they tell you after
they
you...
told me that my colon, which I call Powell, that's the nickname for my colon.
It's a good name.
Looks like the like it's a new one. I don't. Is that a good one? I think that's a good. That's
so
a good thing.
You won't have to use Wendy's doctor.
No.
So who do you think had a more traumatic experience?
I would imagine she did. Of the two of us, the only trauma for me was this: when the procedure was over, they bring you back to a little recovery room where you get a half an hour, 40 minutes, and then the doctor comes in and tells you, and he shows you, he gives you pictures, which. In the history of anyone giving me anything, I've never thrown anything way quicker than those pictures because I don't know what to do with those. Yeah. Oh, these will go up on the refrigerator. People will love to see these.
The holiday season's here, Christmas card.
One of the nurses said, she goes, because I talked to her quite a bit before the procedure. Uh-huh. So she said at the end, she came in and she said everything went extremely well. She said, and I didn't recognize you. And I go, you didn't recognize me? She said, no, I've been told that you're a co-host on WGN, and I didn't recognize you. And I said, well, how did you find that out? And she said, one of the other nurses that was in during the procedure, she knew who you were. And I said, I know this is an odd question, but at what point in the procedure did she recognize me?
Oh, look at that. Yeah, hey, that's Bill.
Yeah.
Bill and Wendy, mornings
at
10.
I need to know to the split second when exactly she recognized me. That'd be very important.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, so here's another question. As a guy that's like battled, the bulge all his life, do you lose a lot of weight?
Yeah, you do. Because everything that's in you is expelled out of you thanks to this miracle liquid.
Right. And how much did you lose?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
You don't get on a
scale. I have no
idea.
See,
I would have brought a scale with me.
But I did some magazine shoots in the 24 hours from the time I started taking the liquid till my procedure.
Uh-huh.
I was on the cover of 3 different magazines. So that's not bad. That's
no,
a nice
pretty good.
Bonus.
Well, I'm glad it went well.
Thank you. It did go well. And I have to say to anyone who's been on the fence thinking, oh, should I have this procedure done? Should it not? It was explained to me on and on and on and on that early detection when it comes to colon cancer is the key, that so many people put this thing off and then they have something going on. So to anybody who's thinking about it or should have had it done years ago, go have it done. It's as painless as if I can do it, anyone can
it's
do
not
it.
Just for fun. There's an actual purpose
oh,
to it.
Oh, yeah.
And the worst place to have a colonoscopy would be on the fence.
Yes. For so many reasons. Harry Tynowitz is here. We're talking about anything medical, anything you want. We're at 312-981-7200. Stick around. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff and my friend Harry Tynowitz, who's sitting in for Wendy. Wendy is recuperating from her knee surgery. We'll probably check in with her tomorrow, if not tomorrow, Wednesday or Thursday at the latest. Let's go to the phone lines. Like I said, a colonoscopy for me on Friday. I urge everybody, this is something you need to have done at some point. They recommend from 50 on that you have it done every 5 to 10 years, depending on your family history. It really went off without a hitch. I was amazed at how simple everything went. I remember none of it. They gave me they give you an IV, and they say, you're going to be out for a while. I said, when will that happen? And they go, in the next 5 to 10 seconds, that's it. And then you woke up, say, you're done. You're done.
Did you get any extra to take home?
No, there's no extra detail.
You would have been so popular here at the station.
That's for sure. There's no question about that. Hey, Pam, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Fine. You had this done recently, too, huh?
Yes, I just turned 59, and I've had about 4 of them,
I believe. Wow. Has the procedure changed much?
Yes. Oh, my God. In Libertyville, there's a place. I think it's Physicians of Libertyville or something like that. It's off of Winchester Road. All you have to do is take 2 Ducelex capsules before you start everything.
Yeah.
That's like a stool softener.
I took that.
I know that's disgusting. Sorry.
That's all right. Two bouts of that. I had that. They're the if yours were like mine, they are the smallest pills you can possibly make, right?
Yes, and they're gel.
Yeah.
Those gel capsules, mine was, and they just go right down.
Yeah.
And then they tell you to take Miralax, which you mix with water. There's absolutely no flavor. I forgot what size bottle it is. It's one of the bigger ones, not the biggest, which is like humongous.
Yeah.
You take this bottle, and you do it every, I forget how many minutes, every half hour, every hour, something like that, I don't know, until what comes out of you is fairly clear.
Yeah.
And then, but there's no flavor. When I first had one, I had to get that kit with a mini milk jug, and you mix the packet of powder with the water, and that was so disgusting.
Nestle's Quick?
No, it's not Nestle's Quick, Harry. They can't give you Nestle's Quick.
I wish.
No.
It was awful. But if you just do the Ducalex and the Miralax, there's no flavor. You can mix Miralax with, like, 7-Up or, anything. Gatorade, nothing red, though. I believe there was a thing where there's nothing red. Like, I couldn't take Sudafed either because it's red.
Four years ago, it was red.
The solution was red. The thing you had to drink was red.
You know, here's a problem for me.
Yes.
The names. You know, they call it Miralax what was the other, the softener called?
Ducalex.
Miralax. Why don't they just give it like a fun name and it won't be so scary?
Like Niagara Falls.
You don't get gas pains or anything.
Right.
There's no flavor.
Yeah.
It was very much more pleasant.
Now, Pam, they included with mine, there was a packet of lemon flavoring, like a little powder that you could sprinkle in. And they said at the pharmacy, if you want to, they go, some people don't want to. I go, why wouldn't you? Just, you know, if it gives it some flavor, take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can do that, I suppose, if you want flavor in that. But really, it's clear water. There's no flavor at all. I'm serious. I swear to God, I'm the worst medicine taker. No flavor.
But it's syrupy, right? It's like a thick water, isn't it?
Nope, it's a powder granules that you stir in your water, and it's not thick. It's not thick. I just threw it again for another reason. I had some female type surgery, so I had to have Miralax. And there is I mixed it in apple juice, and it was fine. It's not syrupy. It's not thick. My husband will call it a Miralax cocktail.
Oh, delicious.
But there's no. It wasn't thick and syrupy.
Oh, wow. All right, so we're making advances. That's good news. I'm glad everything's okay, Pam. Thanks for the phone call.
Sure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Do you notice any time a woman says female problems, female surgery, female... Guys, that's it. There's like a wall.
We're done.
We can't say anything.
We're done. I'm just going to watch The View, and it'll probably come up on there.
I do have to say, since you brought up The View,
uh-huh.
Before the show started, you know, Steve Bertrand comes by the office every morning, and we kind of set up what's going to happen on the show.
He's your little buddy that does the news
from time to time.
He's on at noon.
Yeah, he comes on at noon with the Wintrust Business Lunch. So he said hi to you, he welcomed you and everything like that, and then he brought up the fact that he was talking about a television show, he goes, Harry, you would like this because you enjoy feminine television programming.
Yeah. Yeah,
why would he think that?
He said, well, when I filled in for you a week ago Friday, we had a television guest in here, and we went through, like, the shows that I DVR, and Steve's wife, at least he claims it's his wife, she said Harry watches the same shows I do.
Oh, wow.
So therefore, you know, I'm a woman. But I'm okay with that.
Give me an example or two. What are the shows that you're watching that Steve's wife is also enjoying?
I'm trying to think like what I would have said. I have Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I know what it is.
Men and women can both enjoy that show.
This Is Us.
Oh, I love This Is Us.
Right. I'm secure enough in my masculinity to say I enjoy This Is Us.
But I get teased all the time here, and rightfully so, because no one watches The View more often than I do. Like, I tape, because it's on now, and I DVR it,
you
and then I watch it when
watch
I go
it?
Home, and I've watched it from the very beginning, and I may be the only guy who watches the, I don't know if any other guy, even, like, they'll show the crowd sometimes, there's no guys there.
No, do you still watch All My Children?
Yes. I'm binge-watching All My Children.
You loved All My Children.
Yeah, I did. I watched it from the time I was in college until it almost went off the air.
Right. And again, I don't want to, like, you know, force gender roles on anybody.
Right.
But I'm guessing that show was probably more popular with females.
All My Children? Yeah.
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 Where did they live again? And
Pine Valley.
Pine Valley.
Were you going to say Happy Valley?
I was going to say Harper Valley.
Harper Valley. That's a Barbara Eden movie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. No, if you can watch those shows and get any information from them, like, because I always looked at watching The View is understanding life from a woman's perspective and that can only help me.
Yes, it can. And I'm sure
I'm married to a woman. I have two daughters who are women, and it helps me.
And for what you do for a living, I mean, it's great. It gives you topics.
Yeah.
It gives you issues.
Right.
It gives you stuff that you could think about and make you a better person, and you could bring it here on the air.
Thank you for saying that. I don't get that same feeling from everybody who works here, but thank you for saying that.
Well, sure.
And also, what I have to say this about The View, it's one of the only chances you get on real television to see people disagreeing with each other. Usually television, I mean, other than the extreme, you know, there's shows that are really extreme where people are just screaming and yelling.
Yeah, like the sports writers.
Like the sports writers. Well, like, you know, like all the Real Housewives shows where they're just at each
other.
You know, I can't stomach that. But on The View, you get different opinions kind of clashing, and I welcome that. I like to see that.
Yes. I think maybe if you weren't wearing culottes to work every day, that would be different.
All right. That will change soon.
So now, like do you watch that show, Life in Pieces?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that like a feminine show?
No. No, 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 no.
It's just it's a family show.
Yeah.
It's good. It's funny.
Exactly.
I like it. It's
yeah.
intelligent humor.
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing there.
You'll find something.
Yeah.
Harry Tynos is filling in for Wendy Snyder. We've got a lot to discuss with you. News is next, and then a whole lot more, including new words, the way that the dictionary has changed this year in 2017. You'll need to know that so you can speak properly. It's 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, it's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. Harry Tynowitz is filling in for Wendy. Wendy's going to be gone through this year, and we'll be back in January. She just had knee replacement. She's fine. I do want to say this. I'm not going to talk much about the colonoscopy, only to say this. This is what I was hoping would happen. We just received a text. Bill, I just got off the phone, and I scheduled my first colonoscopy. I am 57 years old. Love the show. That's what my goal is. That's what my hope is that a couple months ago when it was Colonoscopy Awareness Month, I said, I should have had this done years ago. I'm afraid. And everybody said, don't be afraid. I'm now here to tell you, if you're somebody who should have had it done years ago, go in, have it done. There's no pain involved. There's no unpleasant memories involved.
And hurry up and schedule it. Otherwise, Bill will schedule yours for you.
I will do that. I'm not afraid to do that, Harry.
Can I say, Bill, my mother had her first one at the age of 90.
Well, now, why did she wait that long?
I don't know. Back then, nobody had to have them, you know.
Is that right?
Before that. And then she just never thought it. I don't know if the doctor never said anything or what.
Really?
And they did find some cancer. Yeah. And she's fine now.
She's okay.
But she had a first colonoscopy
at 90.
At the age of 90.
Wow.
And I had my first one at 54. So I was like you. I kept putting it off.
And you agree,
and it
right?
was absolutely ridiculous.
There's no negative memory to it. There's zero.
Oh, I remember, yes.
Do you remember a little bit? Oh, that part's bad. Yeah,
that wasn't that negative memory. Yeah. But I used Crystal Light and I doused it.
Oh, did you? Are you allowed
to
do that?
Yeah.
Crystal Light could do that to you anywhere, anytime. You don't even have to be getting a colonoscopy.
But to this day, I cannot have a glass of lemonade.
Oh, really? Because it reminds you?
No,
Yeah.
Even country time?
No, even country time. Can't
That's
do it yet.
That's not good.
Give me a couple more years.
That's not good. All right. Here's a little holiday cheer for you. They have unearthed some letters from 100 years ago, right around 100 years ago, the early 20th century, that children wrote to Santa Claus. Now, Harry, back then, their wants, their needs, their dreams, slightly different from those of children today.
There weren't a lot of people asking for, like, iPhones.
A small amount.
The futuristic kids?
Yeah. Xbox getting almost no mentions 100 years ago.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah. I'm surprised
Apple
by that.
Watch?
I do see Apple Watch on a couple of these, yeah.
Yes. What did Mike Pence ask for?
Fidget spinner.
Okay, those are good.
All right, so these are children's letters to Santa. Was he even called? Yeah, he was called Santa back then.
Might have been Saint Nick.
Father Christmas.
Oh, Father
Maybe
Christmas.
Father Christmas. All right, so here are the kids' letters. Dear Santa, please bring Mama a new dress and Papa a new suit and me $100 worth of peanuts. I guess that's all. Signed, Russell.
Is Russell a baby elephant?
Yes. He's a pachyderm.
Because look, what an unselfish kid. You know, and is that still a priority? I wonder how many kids today
are asking clothing for their moms and dads?
Yeah,
none.
Just asking for their parents first.
Right. But then Russell goes, $100 worth of peanuts in 100 years ago money is like $100,000 worth of peanuts, isn't
really?
It?
Really? I don't know.
He got selfish at the end. Here's one from a kid named Guy.
Did Russell turn out to have a peanut allergy? Or?
No one had peanut allergies 100 years ago. Nobody. It was unheard of. This is one from a guy named Guy who lived in Oklahoma. This was a child. He was a child in 1901. He said, "Santa, just bring me the same things as my brother Joe, only more of them and better." Well, that's one thing that hasn't changed.
No, that hasn't changed at all.
It's remained exactly the same. This is from
By the way, it was Joe Biden's brother.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
A little girl named Olga back in 1903.
Uh-huh.
That name has lost some heat.
That's what's changed.
Yeah.
My grandma's name was Olga.
Was Olga?
Yeah, we called her Grandma Choo Choo because.
Is it a story you can tell on the air?
Sure. Yes.
What happened?
It's my grandma.
I'm sorry.
She stayed with us for the weekend. She was going back home on Monday morning, and so she was taking the train. And my sister was saying, "Goodbye, Grandma. Goodbye, Choo-Choo. Goodbye, Grandma Choo-Choo."
Grandma Choo-Choo.
So she was just always Grandma Choo-Choo.
Dear Santa, that's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. Chewbacca's grandma, also named Grandma Choo-Choo, by the way. My doll had a... Oh, this is a sad one, Harry. Prepare for sadness. My doll had a very bad accident. She smashed her head between a door, and now she has no head. Please bring her a head. From Olga in 1903.
Olga, maybe it's time someone took a little responsibility.
Horrible
Olga.
Story.
I'm guessing her doll didn't actually smash the head.
I don't know the backstory.
Did Olga get mad, maybe?
It doesn't say, Harry. Now, if American Girl dolls now look like they're from 100 years ago, what did American Girl dolls look like 100 years ago?
Like Olga.
Like Olga, maybe.
They had no head.
Sad.
Yeah, they look like, what do they look like now? They look like Kardashians?
They look very...
normal?
Eerie and realistic, yeah.
Oh, good. That's good.
Very realistic.
Why haven't been at the American Girl store for about 10 years
yeah.
or 12 years? And I remember they had a counter that you could like eat lunch
oh,
with
yeah,
your
yeah.
American Girl doll.
Yep. And a stage show. Yeah, they did.
But like Barbie dolls, you know, I know that they came out recently with like a modern day Barbie.
Yeah.
You know,
a more realistic version.
Right. The way people look.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to the way the Barbie doll always
right.
looks.
Like a fake plasticky.
Yeah.
Did your daughter have Bratz dolls?
Bratz dolls.
They looked, they were, Terry and I would never get them for our daughters uh-huh. because they seemed promiscuous.
Really?
I know they were dolls, but they seemed easy. They seemed slutty.
Oh, no, that's not
yeah,
good.
Yeah, Bratz dolls.
No,
Slut dolls, that's what we call them.
Oh, no, that's not good. My brother Billy had a bunch of those.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Dear Santy, this is from a girl named Harriet in Nebraska in 1901. Dear Santy, please ask God to give us back our mama, and you can give our presents to somebody else. We just want her. Wow.
I feel bad. I told
wow.
you. Wow. You're like, hey, which of these you
this
know,
one's sad.
Topics? Well, the Santa ones will be cute,
yeah,
fun,
they were cute,
happy.
But sad. this is from a boy named... what? Yeah?
I always want to follow up on these. Do you know if she got her mom back?
They really... they don't go into detail, Harry, but I'm going to guess that they did not.
Oh, it's terrible.
Spoiler alert. This is from a little boy named Ernest. He lived in Washington, D.C. in 1907. His note says this: Dear Santa, bring me a horse, an ox, your love, a doll. Of course I am a boy, but I love girl dolls, and I love pumpkin pie.
Kid was years ahead of his time.
Way ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Ernest. This is from a boy. I'm sorry.
What Ernest did there with that letter to Santa?
What?
He saved Christmas.
He did, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
They should make a movie about this. Dear Santa, just bring me everything that you can get your hands on. Be sure not to forget. That is all I want. That is from Alice. She lived in Texas in the year 1900.
Uh-huh. You went out with her, didn't you?
For
before
a little while.
Cherry.
Yeah. She invented selfish. Santa Claus. This one is even sadder than uh-huh. the last one. This is awful.
We need some Santa music, you know, like some like cute
some,
little
some adorable
bell.
Santa music.
Yeah, like
Jasmine,
bell
can
music?
You find something that's both adorable but could turn at any moment? Like many of his notes.
Yeah, like the Eurythmics early stuff.
This one is tragic. I'm going to warn you right now. Both in tone and in spelling. This one is awful.
Oh no.
Santa Claus, my papa is dead. I haven't got nobody to get me anything. If you want to send me something, I live at 703 Mechanic Street. I am your friend, Floyd from Iowa.
Okay, now, did somebody find that and do something for that kid?
I hope so. Dear Santa, don't come to my house because you will scare me. Go to my Uncle Henry's house. That is from Clyde Lowe, who lived in Illinois in 1903. Had some weird grudge on his Uncle Henry that is unexplained. I don't know why he's so upset with Henry. Oh, let's take a break, and then we have more of these. Okay. These are some funny and some, well, most horribly tragic notes to Santa Claus.
Are you going to surprise the listeners at the end by having one of these kids that wrote the letter, and
yes,
now they're like 97?
Yes. And they will come in, and yeah, we'll find out how everything went in the last 100 years. All right, stick around. We've got more show ahead. Harry, your wish has been granted. Jasmine found some beautiful music to put underneath these letters, which
thank you, Jasmine.
In many cases start out funny and tragically. These are letters to Santa Claus written 100 plus years ago. Here's one from a little girl named Jewel. She lived in New Mexico in 1922. And it would have been cool if she'd married a man whose last name was Osco. I don't know if that happened. We'll find out.
The kid had a drugstore right there.
Oh, yeah, right there. I want a basketball and some candy. Do you remember when I slammed the door in your face? It's because I was afraid of you then. From Jewel. A lot of these are very violent.
Yeah.
There's a lot of violence 100 years ago here.
Probably he startled her. She probably wasn't expecting Santa,
yep,
wherever it was, that she slammed the door on his face.
Also, it was customary in New Mexico then, if you had a visitor to your home, to slam their door in their face. I don't know why it was.
Really?
Yeah, it was very popular then.
I don't know. It's the land of enchantment, Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that or not.
New Mexico is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Dear Santa Claus, I would order a doll, but I'm afraid the girls will laugh at me. And that's from Anson, who lived in New York in 1902. There is a theme of that. There's an undercurrent of a lot of that.
A lot's been going on since then, Anson.
Mm-hmm.
Years ahead of your time.
Harry, someone wants to know by text, 630, is it too late to do something for these kids?
No. No, I think we find, you know, they've got that, what is the name of that company now where you can, like, find Ancestry.com?
Yeah.
I bet you could find,
grandchildren.
Grandchildren, and take care
something
of them.
Yep.
And, you know, just give them these gifts that their grandparents had asked
yep
for.
Here's one from a little boy named Hexie. He lived in Indiana in 1910.
He asked for a new name.
Right off the bat. Please, Santa. Please.
I can't be Hexie anymore.
For the love of all that is good. Here's what he says. Dear Santa, you better bring me what I want, or when I see you, I will take your head off.
What?
Wow.
That works?
Yeah. Santa responds to threats, Harry.
That can't be good.
Dear Santa, please bring me a clown riding a donkey.
And here you are.
A donkey.
That's from David. He lived in Indiana in 1913. He just all he wants is what any of us want, Harry. A clown riding a donkey.
They didn't specify. Could be any clown.
Right. Right. These were lean times that you couldn't specify. You had to just say whatever you had,
right,
whatever you have in the clown riding a donkey department. That's what I want.
Because like Emmett Kelly was the sad clown,
right?
But he would have been happy with that.
Yep, yep. This is from a girl named Rhoda who lived in Virginia. Earlier, we read a letter from a girl named Virginia who lived in Rhode Island. This is
the
opposite.
Odds of that?
Please bring me a horse, some wood, a hammer, and some nails. Papa expects that I will be a carpenter.
And she's going to lock the horse in?
I don't know what she's doing.
Why's the horse come in there? How's the horse come into play?
I think she's going to build a stable for the horse, I think. It doesn't say. There wasn't a lot of time.
Yeah.
Back in the early 1900s, Harry, you had to write these letters fast because there was famine,
right?
Pestilence. You had to be very quick.
Now it feels like we're at Seder.
It does kind of.
Uh-huh.
Dear Santa, please bring me a brother to play with.
Aww.
Papa was a bad Democrat when he married Ma. But she turned
what
on him.
What?
And now he is an awful Republican. This was written by a boy named Mel who lived in Missouri in 1898.
Bad
This could have been written today.
Bad Democrat, awful Republican.
Yeah.
So what's left at that point?
Back then, the Whig Party.
Oh, that's right. There were several presidents that were in that.
Yep. The Whig Party was very popular. Dear Santa, I thought that you had died. I wrote to you many times and didn't get an answer. The newspaper said that you was living in a hotel. fake news. They had fake news in 1907. It's from a boy named Joe who was concerned that Santa had expired.
So he didn't ask for anything.
No, he just was inquiring about his health.
Okay. Apparently Santa, he found something that told him Santa was still with us.
The story in the paper.
How old do you think Santa is now?
Santa's ageless and timeless, Harry. I don't think you can put an age on him. I don't think.
Do we have like a birth? Do we have like the first time Santa appeared?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. They always say that the look of Santa, like the Santa mm-hmm. we know, is based on Coca-Cola ads from the early 1900s.
Yeah.
Before that, I guess it was the drawings they used in several poems about Santa. They would assume he looked
right.
Like that.
And growing up in Chicago, I just thought it was like Hard Rock Cocoa and
Joe. Yeah. Dear Santa, will you please bring me an iron stove? It is real cold because gas has gone out and we cannot make it come back in. That's sad.
That is sad.
That's from Ruth in Ohio in 1904.
Maybe Ruth had gotten like a lot of stovetop stuffing that year.
That was the number one most asked for thing in 1904, Harry, was stovetop stuffing.
They needed a stove.
I hate to end on this last one because it's
then
the
make
most...
Make one up.
Dear Santa, the world is a magnificent place.
Okay.
It's from a boy named Sterling.
what was the first thing you asked Santa for, Bill?
I remember the thing that I wanted the most when I was very little was this castle that I received.
Uh-huh. Did it have like 300 different beer cans in it?
No.
Because you
received
those as well?
No. This was a castle from a company called Elastolin, a European company. They had it at Marshall Fields, and I saw it, and I fell in love with it, and I was either 4 or 5 years old. That was the first thing I remember. Do you remember the first thing you asked for?
Yeah, sure. I believe the first thing that I asked for was I wanted Hank Aaron on the Cubs.
Oh.
Yeah, because he was on Atlanta.
Oh.
And, you know, I wanted the Cubs to win. So I went to
was
the...
Was Santa GMing at the time? Was he a general manager for the...
Yes, I saw him at the winter meetings, in fact, which are going on right now.
Yeah.
But I asked Santa if the Cubs could have Henry Aaron. And he went, hammering, Hank?
Were you horribly disappointed when that dream didn't become a reality?
No, I was horribly disappointed, though, when I saw Santa had a Bloody Mary working.
Oh.
We were at Old Orchard, and Carson Perry Scott, I believe... They had a Santa Claus there. The guy had Bloody Marys going.
Do you know, I told a similar story the other day.
What?
About we took our daughters to see Santa, not at Old Orchard, but at another shopping center, and it was at closing time. They weren't the last two. There was somebody else after them. And then a half hour later in a restaurant, we saw Santa at the bar enjoying a cocktail.
We saw Santa in Kalamazoo. We saw the same Santa. It was like the closest restaurant possible to the mall. And my wife's parents, my in-laws, live in Kalamazoo. And, you know, it's like my daughter, you know, he didn't have the red suit on anymore, but he had the Santa beard and the Santa glasses.
The Santa we saw was still clad in Santa regalia, everything.
And Santa was having a little Yuletide chair.
Yeah. Did you say anything? Because I said something to him.
I joked with the waitress. You went up to Santa and said something?
I said, I know that he worked hard all day getting the kids' wishes, but some of those kids are still awake and sitting right there, and I showed him where my daughters were sitting, and maybe it's not the best that they see Santa, you know, enjoying a cocktail after.
But he wasn't, like, doing body shots.
No, he wasn't. No. But still, it could be jarring for a child to see Santa... You know, popping a couple of Limeritas after a hard day's work.
No, do you think, like, on the way back home, like, Santa ever got pulled over? How many eggnogs have you been drinking?
Maybe. It's possible. All right, we must take a quick break. We'll take a break, then some news, and then...
Limeritas. Huh?
Limeritas, yeah, he loves them. And then how the language has changed this year alone in 2017.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's 2017. All right, stick around. A lot more show. Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN.
Oh, the dictionary is very necessary. With the dictionary, you'll see. Yes, you'll really see that it's extraordinary.
Steve, is this your ringtone? Steve Kleinedler joins us right now.
I have not heard this as a lead-in yet.
It's a beautiful song. Beautiful song. That Taylor Swift knows how to spin a song. Yeah. Steve Kleinedler is the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, and he's a lexicographer as well. Steve, for the English language to work, it must constantly be changing, right? There's never a time where there's no new words or no new phrases. Every year there's bunches and bunches of them, correct?
That's true. That's true of every living language, in fact.
And it's good for sales. Let's not forget that, too, right? Because you want the newest, most latest version of the dictionary, of the American Heritage Dictionary. All right, so what has changed? What have been the biggest changes this year from last that you see?
Well, in every year, it depends on what we're paying attention to and what our consultants are telling us. Of course, there's always technology terms coming in. That's pretty much a truism. We go out of our way to look at food and cuisine words just because people like talking about food and cuisine at the end of the year. It's a popular subject. And then there's also updates based on what our usage panel has told us.
Go back to the tech words for just a second. I would imagine that as computers became commonplace and part of everybody's daily activities, that was probably the biggest influx of words of anything over the last 10, 15, or 20 years, right?
The last 10, 20, 30 years. And you know, when you think about even basic words like cut, paste, scroll, that kind of and any type of thing that used to be done physically in a publishing company or by editors, now using these basic words to describe the computer counterpart, that required a lot of revision. This year was a big year because this was the year that we decided to lowercase internet, following the lead of a lot of news agencies, the Associated Press, for example, moved from an uppercase I to a lowercase I, and we followed suit this year as well.
I blame the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in my case, it's always just delete, delete, delete. Steve, what about like the technology? My teenage daughter and her friends, they're just so lazy. They abbreviate everything. Do we see a lot of that?
Well, there are internet abbreviations, but if you recall 100 years ago when telegrams were a very big thing and people dropped prepositions and other small words and everything, you know, all those blah, 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 stop, you know, and just dropping. And back then people were complaining, oh, the language is being ruined. Anytime there's a technological innovation, people, you know, worry about the changes. I'm sure when the printing press came out hundreds of years ago, people were making the same type of declamations too. But the English language, as we said, changes. It'll survive this. It's survived in abbreviations in the past, and it can live with emoji and everything else.
But you guys do that grudgingly to some extent, don't you? When you have to include those certain words, there's some that you kind of go, well, I guess so many people are using it, we have to include this, right?
Well, when it comes to grudging acceptance, generally we won't enter in our dictionary a term unless we think it's going to stick around for quite a while. We try not to remove things, so we try not to put them in until we're pretty sure they have staying power.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of resources out there for current slang. We tend to catalog it once it's really become entrenched in the language.
Steve, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there's 15 finalists, and they each get to pick one person to go in and, like, champion their cause. And I'm wondering, is that how this works? Does somebody go in there and say, hey, the word epitome needs to be in the dictionary now?
Very rarely. I mean, we get a lot of mail and email, believe you me. But it's a good example of that on this list is the word kettle when referring to birders, ornithologists, referring to a group of flying raptors that are ascending in a rising current of warm air. At Houghton Mifflin, which publishes the American Heritage Dictionary, the field guide editor mentioned one of her colleagues had been looking up this word and it wasn't there. And so we looked into it and, you know, used her as a kind of a consulting resource on this birding area. And it's a very common term in birding. And so we realized we should probably add it. And you know, that's an instance where someone is like, hey, there's this missing component that you have. But a lot of time people are just calling in or writing in to saying, hey, I made up this word. Can you put it in? Or like, I made up this word. Put it in and pay me money. You'd be surprised how many people
really
request money for us. Oh, yeah.
There should be a word for those people.
Yeah.
All right. What about this word? Now, this is a new one for the dictionary, for the American Heritage Dictionary. The word MacGuffin. Now, you guys define it as an object in a work of fiction, especially in a film, whose only purpose is to advance the plot. But I remember Alfred Hitchcock was using this word all the time, MacGuffin, and we're looking at 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Absolutely. He is he definitely popularized the word. In fact, we have in our etymology at that word, we reference him. He didn't invent the word, but he did popularize it. And this is something that our film and cinema consultant, when going through a related set of words on, I forget what the exact focus was, but they commented, this common word in cinema is missing. You should consider adding it, and we did. And that a lot of times when we're because we're not just adding new words, we're also researching, reviewing. In addition to adding these words and senses this year, we also revised over 2,000 words, and a lot of it comes from our consultants. So yeah, they said this word is needed, and we added it. And you're right, Hitchcock did popularize that term.
It's Bill, you are a dictionary yourself.
Thank you, Harry. That's very nice of you.
So I see you have the word burner in here, an inexpensive cell phone, which usage is paid in advance and can be thrown away. Like, I'm wondering, you mentioned cinema. Like, if a popular TV show uses a word, like
The Wire. Yeah.
Right. And so that's where you get that from.
Well, the Wire didn't invent the word burner, of course, but it did help popularize it. It's been used in other works of crime fiction and science fiction, but it's also used in real life. I mean, you'll see it used in news reports and stuff. Certainly, shows like The Wire bring the word into the forefront, help increase its popularity, so then other people start using it too. So that's one piece of the component. There's very few words that have been added directly from television shows. Yada, yada, yada comes to mind.
From Seinfeld?
There's a couple Seinfeldisms. But it isn't all that often. It's usually that in conjunction with the ubiquity of being used in the pop culture lexicon.
I don't see, Steve, I don't see this on the list, but I will quickly explain the phrase double down. Now, as a degenerate gambler, former degenerate gambler, this was a blackjack term. You would double down.
Good hand.
But now it's become a political term.
Both have been around for quite some time, and sports and gambling is, of course, a very productive way of bringing terminology into the language. There's a lot of sports terminology, a lot of betting terminology. I mean, just poker terms, as poker's influences have risen in the last decade. You'll see poker terminology coming, and of course I'm blanking on everything right at the moment. I even play cards, but it is a very common mechanism by which terms enter the language.
Steve Kleinedler is our guest, the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back with more changes to the dictionary that have been made from last year to this. If you want to jump in with any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Harry Tynewitz in for Wendy on WGN.
Look words up. Open up the book. Look words up. You know where to look.
It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynewitz sitting in for Wendy. Steve Kleinedler joins us right now. He's the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, talking about the changes of this upcoming dictionary from all the previous years. Several people have texted us various questions about words. Steve, what about this one? Bigly, which is most commonly used by our chief executive officer. Is that even really a word, or is that something he just came up with?
Well, my fellow linguistic colleagues at the time, you can find information on this on the internet with good searching. They did phonological analysis, and it does turn out he was saying big league. But that said, if you look at the Oxford English Dictionary, you'll see that the use of bigly as an adverb goes back at least a century, possibly more. Is it that common? No. Is it current in the lexicon? Not really. But in this case, the term did exist. And phonologically, it is very likely that he was actually saying big league until it took on a life of its own. Perhaps now bigly is the word of the of the moment for him. So but with acoustic analysis, you can make a lot of determinations like that.
He's on TV all the time. I would imagine that he'd be a source you guys would look at. Is there a word, there are words that didn't quite make the cut this year that he was throwing out there, like Covfefe or Mar-a-Lago?
Well, like kafefi. No, I mean that's the type of word that we might look at humorously, but really not consider adding. He, like many politicians, bring words into the vernacular or pronunciations. We've talked about the word pronouncing nuclear as nuclear for quite some time, which a number of presidents have done, for example. So most of his, these things like kafefe or other misspellings in tweets are data samples, but very few are likely to actually get included. And again, they really took off and everyone started using them non-ironically.
Since we're talking about the political bend on these words, snowflake always used to just mean a flake of snow, but now it means something a lot more. That's one that has changed. It's now a person who is considered to be overly sensitive or too easily offended, especially as a result of believing himself or herself to be unique or special. Did this change just happen, Steve, or is it something that's been gradual?
It's been gradual. This term has been around for probably the better part of a decade, but it really took off in the last year and a half. You see it used in the political discourse a lot. You'll see it in political reporting, in news articles about either the right or the left. And so even though it's been around for a while, it's kind of been on that low radar thing. And in the last 16 months or so, it's really taken off. And therefore, we figured it warranted getting included.
It seems like it's used in a very negative, derogatory way, too. Anytime you hear it on any of the cable news channels, it's thrown in as a slam.
Yes, it's definitely used pejoratively, which we try to encapsulate in the way that we word the definition. You know, you're using it to refer to someone that you think is being too sensitive. It is definitely used in a pejorative way.
Do you have like a section for men and women to call their spouses when they get very angry?
Not a special section per se, but that sounds like an interesting blog post.
I think so. And Steve, how does one gravitate towards where you are? You know, being in charge of figuring out, hey, that's a word, that's not a word. How did you make your left turn into this world?
Well, Chicago has a lot to do with that. I lived there back in the day. My undergraduate degree is at Northwestern, and I was a linguistics major, and one of my professors started giving me freelance work, and I ended up going to grad school at the University of Chicago to continue my studies in linguistics. And one thing led to another, and I started up at the AHD in 1997
and
moved out to Boston at that point.
What a story.
Yeah.
630 says, what about EVS, EVS? My daughter says it all the time. For people who don't know, that's teen speak for whatever. You know, you just say EVS.
Yeah, there's EVS, there's also WEVS, there's also stuff like OBVS for OBS, for obvious, this type of shortening. It's, again, this type of process is very common. It's very well caught in online dictionaries that capture the slang of the moment, which is great. If newspaper columnists and the like started using it and it became ubiquitous and hung around, it would be something that we would probably add as well. But it's TeamSpeak is a very robust way to introduce vocabulary into the vernacular, and sometimes it jumps over and becomes used by everyone instead of, you know, a special group, in this case teenagers.
Bill, I was with my daughter and her two friends at the Hawks game last night.
Yeah.
And they had this like relay race, hockey teams on skates, and one of them was a girl, and she beat the guy that she was racing against to give a victory to the blue team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, that, you know, there's a girl skater, and they all three, yay queen.
Yay queen?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think it's like to acknowledge when a girl does something great against a guy. I'm not even.
Yay or yeah?
Yeah queen.
Yeah queen.
You. Yeah queen. See how out of it I am?
Okay. You'll also see it with S's, Y-A-S-S. Yes.
But then I won't know what to do, Steve, when the queen does something extraordinary. I won't know how to address that.
Right. Or the group queen.
Right.
You know, they got a new singer now.
No, it's too tough. It's too tough.
Well, yeah, all children have a way of talking so that their parents don't know exactly what they're talking about. I think, you know, that goes back to the decades for sure. Our parents probably didn't know what we were talking about when we said something was tubular.
Right. I still don't. I'll be honest with you. Several people want to know by way of text if the word ain't is ever acceptable. It's in the dictionary, right, Steve?
Oh, ain has been in the dictionary for quite some time. Webster's added it in the early 60s to Webster's Third. The American Heritage Dictionary originally got its start as a reaction to that, but of course ended up entering it as well. If you go online to our dictionary at ahdictionary.com and look up the word ain't, you'll see a fairly lengthy usage note about the public perception about it, why it's considered non-standard, where it gets used, that sort of thing. So, it you know, much like the word irregardless, it is in the dictionary, and whether or not you choose to use it depends on whether and how you, for example, want to be perceived. If the company that you keep looks askance at it, you will give it a second thought, and if they don't care, you might use it with a plum.
I can't tell you how many times when I was in grade school, I'd have a teacher who say, if you use the word ain't, you're not going to pass, or we'll put you out in the hall. You can't be part of the class if you use ain't. And the argument was always, but it's in the dictionary. A kid would always say, I'll show you in the dictionary. It's in there. It always became a little bit of an issue.
Yep. I remember the old saying, ain't a word because ain't in the dictionary. But of course it was.
Right. That should be a song too, Steve. I don't know if you're a songwriter, but that would be a very pretty song. Jeff has a question for you. Hey, Jeff, go ahead. You're talking to Steve Kleinedler, executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. What was your question?
Hey, do you ever delete words out of the dictionary?
We do, but not that often. We try to, again, not put them in until we think they're going to stay around. The terminology that we do delete tends to be obsolescent. I think we deleted cassette memory at one point, which is you can still get from the compound parts, but in terms of technological stuff, was less important. In the late 1900s, that is actually true. Yeah. Around 1999 or so, we almost considered deleting Chad because who uses punch cards anymore? But at the time of the staff meetings, we're like, well, I know punch cards are still used in some elections. Literally, we thought that. So we kept it. And then lo and behold, a year later, Chad is on everyone's list.
Huge. Gigantic. Jeff, thanks for your phone call.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Steve, would you be the world's greatest Scrabble partner?
I would not. My colleague Ben Zimmer, who writes to the Wall Street Journal and other things, he's actually on a crossword puzzle cruise right now. He would be much more a formidable opponent than I. A lot of it has to do with memorizing word lists. Some of these Scrabble players, they just spend days and days just memorizing word patterns, which is something I have not done. I'm a good player, but I'm certainly not at the professional level that some of these players are.
Not good enough to be on a Scrabble cruise. That's crazy.
No, yeah, no. I know.
When it comes to Scrabble cruise, Steve would be obsolescent.
Yes, he would. Barb's on the line. Barb, go ahead. Did you have a question for Steve?
Hi, Nate. Well, I have a comment. You're talking about words changing and adding definitions to them. In the, I have an 1850 Webster's dictionary, and in that dictionary, the word upset has one. Whoop! Where did it go again? The only definition for the word upset is to overturn, to overthrow, to overset as a carriage.
Yeah, and that's it.
And overturn and overthrow as of a carriage. So the current definition is definitions are considerably more numerous. Can't talk.
But, Steve, I bet that's a big part of it. When you say you have to revise words, you have to keep adding more and more usages for those words, right?
That's absolutely correct. You know, words come into the language with a specific meaning, and over time, they acquire new meanings. And, of course, upset does refer to knocking something over. I'm checking right now in the OED for the year when this entered, which is like 1440. Wait, no, that's too upset to knock over. It's kind of really long to become overturned, 1799, and I'm looking in the print edition right now, so the online edition might even be more.
This is so bizarre, but I actually know a little something about the way that upset got used to describe when somebody who's not supposed to wins something.
Yeah.
There was a racehorse named Upset, and he was a long shot, and this other horse was supposed to win this horse race for sure, and Upset won, and that became the terminology
from then on.
Yeah, like, you know, like, oh man, like he trumped it.
I'm like most etymologies, I'm almost certain that's a folk etymology. I'm looking in the OED right now. That sense of
how dare you
throw into mental disorder goes back to 1805. Much like my colleague at Merriam-Webster, Corey Stamper, wrote this great book, Word by Word, and in it she talks about how people insist that the word posh comes from port outbound, starboard home, or whatever, which is completely...
It's not true.
It is just not the case. And,
yeah.
And there's documentation, but people will swear upside and down one another. So when it comes to folk etymologies, people are very fiercely protective of
sure.
these stories they've heard, but they're
and they should be.
Incorrect.
Barb, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciated. Steve, great to talk to you again. Steve Kleinedler, the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. Where can people find you, Steve, if they want to know more?
Right. So our online dictionary is at ahdictionary.com.
Yeah.
The book, The American Heritage Dictionary, is available at any brick-and-mortar bookstore or your favorite online bookstore, and we're also an app on the Android and iTunes platforms.
Excellent. Have a great new year. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, that's Steve. Harry, I know that you found evidence to the contrary, huh?
Yeah. Man of War lost one time in his life. It was 1919. The only horse ever to defeat Man of War ran 21 times.
Yeah.
He won 20 races.
Yeah.
The only horse to ever beat him was Upset.
Interesting. Interesting. A quick break, some news, and then Eric Zorn joins us. It's Bill and Harry and for Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Sing the praises of
Zorn. Eric Zorn is here. Eric, I think my favorite part of that song, and it's very subtle, is there's a part toward the middle where you can hear a horse kind of riding away. I don't know what it means.
It is my faithful steed.
Oh, you have a faithful steed? I didn't know you had a faithful steed.
Well, he's not that faithful because he's gone now. I don't have him anymore. He rode away, frankly.
It's Bill F. and it's Harry Tynowitz sitting in for Wendy, along with our friend Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and also musician. You were just telling us off the air... You had a very nice surprise guest over the weekend.
Yeah, we had Mary Schmeek and I host a series of holiday sing-alongs at the Old Town School every
yeah.
year. And we went six shows this year, and the last show was last night. And we had Tom Skilling join us, which was really cool.
Did that go great?
It went really well. Tom is a really genuine, warm, wonderful guy. And he joined us on stage to sing four songs.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, the weather outside is frightful, but inside, it's so delightful.
Don't let it snow, you know. But no, he, you know, he's someone who just, he gets so excited about the weather. And,
yes.
And he's also, but he's a very emotional guy. And one reason that we thought to invite him was how emotional he got over the eclipse.
Yes, he did.
And we try during the show to sort of hit on some current events, but we mm-hmm. also try to keep politics pretty much out of it because
mm-hmm.
people don't come. They want a warm holiday feeling. They don't want a lot of Trump bashing. For instance, I had a plan. I told Mary that I wanted to throw paper towels to the audience at one point. You know, like shoot them in the audience like Trump.
Yes, he yeah. did. Yeah,
that would be when really funny. And she said, absolutely not. Don't you
too
dare.
Political.
Don't you do that. Too political.
Did you ever think there'd be a time in your life where paper towels were considered an object of politics?
I know. I said, come on. It'd be fun. So so we wanted to have some, you know, the clips. That,
yeah.
You know, that's a bipartisan phenomenon. So we had Tom on. And people loved seeing him, and we loved seeing him. He's a really warm guy. And he was singing really loud. And then he came up on stage and sang. And we found, to introduce him, we found this old clip on YouTube that WGN generated a few years ago, the morning show, where they had, you know, Tom Skilling, the singing meteorologist, and you could buy his karaoke album. And it was really funny because, you know, God bless him, he's not the greatest singer.
Eric, take that back. He is the greatest singer.
He is the greatest, almost the greatest.
See him in front of a green screen. It's a completely different act.
It is. So that was a real highlight.
Oh, that's perfect.
Was the applause he got thunderous?
It was. Ooh, there you go. Man, he's good. I see.
Yeah, that's why we bring him in.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
All the great wordplay.
You have written about Roy Moore. And what an amazing story this is.
You know, it's so depressing.
Did you think it would get this deep with Roy Moore? I didn't.
I didn't, and I've been following the news on this pretty carefully. You know, the election is tomorrow in Alabama,
yep.
the special Senate election, and Roy Moore, the Republican, is running against Doug Jones, the Democrat. And,
mm-hmm.
and normally, of course, in Alabama, it would just be the Republican would win, and that would be it.
It's automatic.
Automatic. But then there were all these allegations that came up. I think eight women it is now. Who talked about when Moore was a much younger man? He was the creep in the mall, basically.
Yeah.
He was a 30 man in his early 30s, hitting on teenage girls in the mall. He was allegedly banned from the local shopping mall from, I mean, you know, as a district attorney.
So. They were like 14-year-old at the time, right?
Well, there was one of them was 14, yeah, and he had some sort of a sexual contact with her. And just all, I mean, all these stories that are just really disturbing. And,
yep.
And many people in the National Republican Organization called on him to step aside, and the Republican National Committee pulled its funding from him at one point. And they were just really distancing themselves because this is a really horrible thing. And it's a really bad thing for Alabama. I mean, Alabama's got enough of an image problem as it is. And to elect, if they do this, which it looks like they're going to, if they're going to elect this guy, who is, I mean, it's not, and it's not just these allegations these women made. It's also the some of the things that he said about Muslims, about gay people. Someone unearthed
that the United States was at its best during the days of slavery.
Yes, and that he thinks it would be okay if we got rid of all the amendments after the 10th, which would include
what?
Yeah, it would include the 14th, and which is the one that, you know, the gave equal rights to black people, and include giving women the right to vote and all kinds of other things that he would supposedly want to get rid of. So he's weird bad news all the way around.
Now, here's a theory that's floating around. I'm sure you've heard this theory. The theory is that the Republicans are backing him, that he will win the election, and then once he has won, they will remove him from office. Have you heard this theory?
Sure, I've heard the theory, and they asked Susan Collins about this. I think it was on Meet the Press yesterday, and you know, she's sort of the more moderate Republican senator from Maine, and there's this sense that I got from her answer that they feel like this is being litigated now and that the verdict is going to be delivered by the voters of Alabama. So that if they elect him.
Yeah.
And so the difference between, say, the Al Franken case, which is that voters, when they elected Al Franken, didn't know about these allegations against him.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between that and the Trump case and now the Roy Moore case, which is that voters knew about most of these allegations before they voted, and they still voted for him. And what's really depressing about this is that it indicates that we've become so tribal that it's not about values anymore. It's not about policy. It's not about position. It's just about whose tribe are you in.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got these people who are disbelieving all these women, which is, I think, very hard to do. The stories are highly corroborated, well reported out. Mm-hmm. And in some ways they don't care. I was listening to some focus group recordings, and people are saying, well, you know, this was 30 years ago in Alabama. It was okay for 14-year-olds to get married, and you know, my auntie got married at 13 and had a baby at 15, so that was okay back then. It was fine. Parents should be pleased that someone of his stature would be dating them. So.
Now, Trump has come out and said this, like, the key to our country's success is more winning this election.
He was down in Pensacola over the weekend, which is right near the border of Alabama. It was sort of in the Alabama media market, but not actually in Alabama. I don't know what the strategic thought was there. Maybe they didn't want to have him actually setting foot down in Alabama. But he had a rally there and gave a speech, and now he's doing robocalls. Roy Moore down there, and basically saying that if Doug Jones is elected, he's going to be a puppet for Schumer and Pelosi, and you know, infers that he or implies that we want Roy Moore because he will be my puppet. He will help me
without saying that.
He's not saying that, but it's certainly implied that he wants someone who's going to help him with his agenda. And it's not clear to me. Roy Moore seems like he's enough of a loose cannon that he may not be a reliable vote for Trump on all things that Trump wants.
But that's the game. Like when I talked about this theory that's been floating around of vote for Roy Moore, and then once he gets office, they will quickly remove him from office. All we really care about here is the vote, that he's going to vote the Republican way, and that's all we care about. So we'll just remove him, put in another Republican. But if their argument from day one is let the people of Alabama decide, you're lying to the people of Alabama, because if their decision is Roy Moore and you remove him, you're taking that away.
They think they're talking about that right now. I don't think they're actually going to do it.
No?
I don't think that the Senate is going to go in and overturn the verdict of the voters of Alabama, because that is even more destructive.
Yeah.
And the eight girls, you talk about, you know, how all the stories sort of match up. You know, weren't there like something like 30 or 40 Cosby accusers that had almost identical stories about how he would trap them and put the drinks in their hands? And
yeah. There were a lot. Well, I think the number of people, women who've accused Donald Trump is up around 20 now. And Megyn Kelly just this morning had three of them on and did an interview with them. And I think that there's a sense that maybe we're going to start looking more closely into those allegations against Trump. Now, I'm not sure exactly where that will lead. I don't think there's any possibility that Trump is going to say, okay, well, then I resign.
Right.
It's interesting, though, the strategy that Moore and his supporters have adopted is the same strategy that Trump adopted, and it's very similar to the strategy that Clarence Thomas adopted, if you remember those hearings back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. which is just deny everything. He just denies it and denies it. No matter how much evidence seems to pile up, he just keeps denying it. It didn't happen. These women are all liars. And it seems to work.
So when that happens, is that counsel coming to them? Is that a lawyer or lawyers coming to them and say, look, there's a couple different ways to play this, but we think that in your particular instance, this is the best way to play it?
This is what, I mean, I think that it is. I think that when you look at the way Al Franken responded,
yeah,
he acknowledged that he may have made some women uncomfortable. He didn't intend to, but he didn't, you know, deny everything. He just said, if you remember, one of the allegations against Franken was on that USO tour that he tried to kiss that woman in a rehearsal.
Leanne Tweeden.
Yeah, and he tried to, stuck his tongue in her mouth. And all he said was, I don't remember it that way.
Right.
He didn't just deny it. He could have just said, she agreed. He could have said anything.
Yeah.
But instead he kind of went with, basically, I think what he thought was the truth. And it's ended up, I guess, costing him his career.
Right.
So it seems to me that we've reached a point in our society where the best thing to do whenever you're accused of anything is just deny it.
Don't remember
it
or deny it.
Just deny it, and you can skate through.
All right, let's take a quick break. We have more to discuss with Eric Zorn. If you want to jump in, you can at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us there. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and Harry Tynowitz, who is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back in a couple of weeks. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about Roy Moore. The election is tomorrow. What do you see happening? He's going to win, isn't he?
I see him winning. The polls seem to be showing that it's trending in his direction. Doug Jones, the Democrat, has got to rely on a huge African-American turnout.
Yeah.
And he was down there campaigning this weekend with Cory Booker and, somebody else. I'm blanking on the name who was down there with him. But he was two prominent African-American politicians were campaigning with him over the weekend.
Yeah.
And Roy Moore was at the Army-Navy game. He hasn't been seen. He is just lying completely low, not answering any questions, not giving any speeches, not giving demonstrators a chance to show up in any events.
Roy Moore was with the cheerleaders at the Army.
No, that seems inappropriate.
They're Army guys. These guys in Army costumes. So.
What does it say about all the other Republicans, and this isn't strictly a Republican thing because Democrats have done this too, who came out initially and said, well, we cannot endorse this guy. How bad would it make us all look if we endorse this guy? And then one by one they went, you know what? We can endorse this guy.
Well, the Republican National Committee has come back
and
started helping him in his campaign. And, of course, Trump at first kept his distance and then kind of slowly began suggesting that maybe it was a good idea. And now he's just a full-throated backer of Moore. He's doing the robocalls for him and everything. So what does it say about him? It says about them that they are locked into this, say, I think it's more than partisan. I think it's tribal. And we've got this tax bill that's going to pass on a party line.
So that's more important, isn't it?
It seems to be more important to people that these issues are more important. I'm wondering whether, last week after we spoke, sometime after we spoke last week, Al Franken stepped
yes,
down.
Yes, he did, yeah.
But if you don't notice what he said, in a couple of weeks I'm going to be leaving, I'm going to be stepping down. He didn't do it immediately.
Right.
Like John Conyers just announced his retirement right away. I'm wondering if Al Franken still has his hand on the chess piece, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
In chess, if you move the piece,
yeah.
If you keep your hand on it, you can always move it back. I'm wondering if he moved that, if he announced his resignation, it seemed a little conditional to me.
I don't know if his hands are in the chess piece, Eric. I've seen pictures online, and I can see where his hands are. They don't seem to be on the chess piece.
But what I'm saying is if Roy Moore wins, if he says, okay, well, look, I'm a senator. I've been accused of touching women on the butt by mistake while I'm posing for a photo and being a little too affectionate. And this guy's being accused of trying to have sex with teenage girls. I think there's no comparison. I'm sticking around. That could happen, I think.
All right. To all the people in the Roy Moore case who say innocent until proven guilty, stop hanging this guy. He has not been brought to trial yet. Is he going to be brought to trial at some point? Is that going to happen?
No, I think all of these offenses are well in the past.
Yeah.
Which is what another thing that his supporters will say. Like, hey, look, he's now, I think, in his, I think, is he 70 or he's late 60s? Anyway.
Near there, yeah.
And this happened when he was in his 30s. So yeah. This is like so long ago. He's like a different
He's just
man.
A young pervert
he's
at the time.
He's just a young pervert, yeah. No indication that
not
he's
not today's
an old
Roy
pervert.
Moore.
So, yes, I think that there's a lot of rationalization going on here. But if you're a person who has these moral values, to go out and vote for Roy Moore in this case because you want, like, you think that you want more conservative Supreme Court justices, or you want to help Donald Trump with his various ideas in Congress. You know, I think at some point, then you've got to admit that it's not about policy, it's not about morality, it's not about ethics, it's just all about which tribe you're in.
And the people of Alabama are categorized as this God-fearing, Bible-thumping people. So how do you look aside when somebody's a potential child molester? Well, how do you just go, well, the vote is more important than that?
That's a great question. And also, what does it do to Alabama's entire reputation? It's business.
Right.
I mean, if you're a business, you want to move down there, you think, yeah, are we going to move down to Alabama? Because Alabama is going to gain a reputation.
And they have. I mean, they've had major businesses move down to Alabama. You know, really, I mean, for me, I think of Alabama and I think of football.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, that's all they really, you know, seem to, you know, if you run Nick Saban out, then you're going to really upset the people of Alabama. But, you know, you got a guy that was like, you know, putting his hand where he shouldn't have put his hand, you know, hitting on girls that were 14, 20 years ago. Doesn't matter.
Boys will be boys. Well, someone said if Nick Saban came out against him, that would be the end.
That would be the end.
But you know who did come out? Richard Shelby, the veteran Republican senator of Alabama, came out against Moore. Said he already voted and he wrote in. He said, I wrote in somebody, but I didn't vote for Roy Moore.
Interesting.
That could change the dynamic.
If we could get the one surviving member of Leonard Skinner to come out against him.
Then you have a problem. Eric, thank you.
Good,
it's Eric Zorn, everybody.
Guys.
Read him in the Chicago Tribune, would you please? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's next.